by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com. This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. When most of us think of education, we think of formal institutions, schools, colleges, and universities. But if we dig a little deeper, we can all think of programs that are not in a specific building or judged by a grade or a rating or offer a diploma or a degree. Many of these important programs are run by or assisted by nonprofit organizations. And one of the organizations most involved in extra-institutional education programs is the United Way of Racine County. In today's program, we will hear about several programs sponsored by the United Way. Today, my guests who are here to discuss this are Jamie Racine, who is the Community Schools Manager with United Way of Racine County. For the past 10 years, she has worked as an entrepreneur and community organizer with a focus on youth capacity building and leadership development in both for-profit and nonprofit sectors. Jamie will be joining us a little later in the program. Joni Meyerhofer has been the Imagination Library Program Coordinator at United Way of Racine County for the past 6 years. She is responsible for the operation and development of the Imagination Library Program in Racine County. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And Jessica Safransky-Schott is the Education Initiatives Director at the United Way of Racine County and oversees the operation and implementation of the United Way's education initiatives. She's held various roles at United Way for the last 9 years and is also certified to teach English at the secondary level. Hi, Jessica.
Good morning.
So, Jessica, since you're the Education Initiatives Director, can you give us a brief overview of the different initiatives you have, both ongoing and new?
Absolutely. We have lots of exciting education things happening at United Way. We have just added community schools as our newest education strategy, and that's in addition to some existing programs that we have. Those include Born Learning Trails, Imagination Library, Schools of Hope, and Youth as Resources.
So just give me a quick, maybe one sentence each on those different initiatives so people know what the difference is.
Sure. Born Learning Trails are an interactive strategy that allow parents and caregivers to find ways to make everyday moments teaching moments when they're with their children. So a series of activities that they can do outside that uses fine motor skills, gross motor skills, pre-literacy skills, but is fun so kids don't know that they're learning. Schools of Hope is a program that provides volunteer tutors to students in first through third grades. We are at 9 local elementary schools in Racine helping kids become more confident, capable readers. Imagination Library is a program we've run since 2009. It provides a free book to every child in Racine County that is 4 or under every month until they turn 5. So a great potential for kids to grow, start and grow a home library, which we know is critical to literacy development. Youth as Resources, or YAR, is a program that we've had for 20 years in Racine County, and it invests in young people by providing grants for kids in Racine County to complete community service projects that address a specific need or problem that they see in the community. And then Community Schools is our newest strategy, and it's a way of really making the school the hub of the community and not only providing academic supports, but recreational services and other meeting the needs of the entire family, not just the child, so that the kids have the support they need to be successful.
That's a lot of activity going on. So two of our guests today, besides Jessica, are actually running these two of these programs. So we can hear a little bit more in depth about them. One of them is Joni Meyerhofer. So Joni, tell us a little bit more about the Imagination Library. How did you get involved with it, and What is it to you?
So I've been involved with the Imagination Library program for about the past 6 years through United Way. The program provides books to children from birth to age 5. We started somewhat small west of the eye and have recently grown to expand east of the eye for children within those areas. The ages of birth to 5 are critical for literacy development. I know Jessica noted that. So to be able to build their library at home and get these books in the mail directly delivered to them is essential to their growth and building a foundation for education and kindergarten readiness.
So how are they chosen, or how do parents apply for this?
Sure. There is online registration. Parents can go to our website at www.unitedwayracine.org/IL. They can register their child. It is limited to geographic areas, so it is specific to children within Racine County. So that is pretty much all the only qualifications that a family needs. There's no income requirement. And if there are multiple children within the household, they can all register. So if you have a 2-year-old, a 1-year-old, and a 4-year-old, each of them would be eligible to enroll for the program. The books are age appropriate. They're all through the Penguin Publishing. They're great books. The first book the child would get would be the Imagination Library, Little Engine That Could.
Oh, wow.
And then all the books in between are age appropriate until their final book, which would be Look Out Kindergarten, Here I Come.
That sounds like a lot of fun. So when people register, then do you maintain a database and you have like a big room full of mailing envelopes?
Sure.
And that's what you do every month?
So the program is actually run through the Dolly Parton Foundation.
Uh-huh.
It was started in 1996 by Dolly herself. Literacy, especially early childhood literacy, is very important to her. I know she had a really great relationship with her dad, and she always thought that he was such an amazing man, and she wondered how much more he could be with a solid foundation of education behind him. When she was young, she was at school, and her teacher had asked, we all know she grew up poor in the Smoky Mountains, and her teacher had asked her to bring in a book to share with the class, and she had no book, so she brought the phone book. And that experience so profoundly affected her life that she didn't want any child to go without a book ever. So she started the program in 96. It's a statewide initiative in Tennessee, and then she's grown it. It is currently worldwide. It's in the UK as well as Australia right now, and everywhere throughout the United States.
So how long has it been a program for United Way of Racine County?
Sure. It was started in September of 2009, west of the eye, so Burlington, Waterford, Union Grove area. And as of June 25th of this year, we have made it countywide, so west and east, all children west and east are eligible to enroll.
Okay, so listeners, did you hear that? If you live in Racine County and you know a child under the age of 5, what's the website again where they can go?
Sure, www.unitedwayracine.com. .org/IL.
That sounds great. So do you have any interesting or touching stories that have come out of the Imagination Library program?
Well, sure. Through the program, because the program is so intimate, the books go directly to the home of the child. We often have a lot of feedback from parents about how wonderful it is and how excited their kids are to receive the book each month. One of the great things about the program, I think, is that it really encourages parents to sit down and read with their kids and just sit down and spend time with their children. I can vouch, both of my children are enrolled. My son has recently graduated from the program, and my daughter will be soon also. However, while they were getting the books, that's the first thing they wanted to do when they pulled it out of the mailbox was sit down and read the book. And we all know with young children, they want to continue reading their favorite book over and over and over again. So with it being a monthly program, we would get the next book the next month, and the cycle would continue. They'd want to read that book over and over again until the next book came. We've had families talk about how it encouraged them to complete the summer reading program through the library, which we know is very important. Our local libraries are amazing advocates for the program, and we work hand in hand with them.
Jessica, do your kids get books every month?
They do, now that we've expanded countywide, which was really exciting. So when I when we check the mail and I see there's a book in there, we take all of the other mail out and leave the book, and then we make a special trip to the mailbox so that we can he can open the mailbox and take the book out and read it, and he gets so excited. We got what's the little owl book, Little Owl's Night, last month, and he's obsessed with owls right now, so that has been in frequent rotation at our house, so it's really exciting. And because my kids are different ages, they each get a different book each month, so it's nice that they each have something that's their own, since we're working on sharing, but it's nice to have your own books as well.
You know, one of the secondary things you're doing is introducing children to the whole concept of mail, because we don't get mail very often anymore, right?
Yeah.
So now they know how mailboxes work.
Yes.
So have you been able to measure in some way any effects from the program on school readiness and reading in the kids who participate? I mean, have you talked to teachers or anyone else about school readiness?
Sure. We do have what we called graduation ceremonies for children. We've hosted, I believe, about four ceremonies throughout the past few years, where they're actually held at the libraries, and they're all around kindergarten readiness. We have local kindergarten teachers come and talk to the kids and read stories, and we talk about kindergarten readiness. The program itself, because it was started in 96, has a lot of research behind the benefits of having a print-rich environment and children growing up within that. And we have recently started trying to measure ourselves through the school districts. So to answer your question, yes, we don't have data in front of us yet. We're still analyzing it. But we were able to work with school districts west of the I, because that's where the program has been the longest, and we're working on analyzing those. So far, we've seen a lot of progress with children that have been enrolled in the program, so specifically with the PALS data.
So have there been any efforts at outreach, now that you're countywide, to reach people through, say, their churches or daycares or things like that, so that everyone knows about this? Because we like to think we have a lot of listeners here, but I know not everyone gets the newspaper or listens to WGTD, so.
Sure. Yes, we have done a lot of outreach efforts. We have been working with local childcare centers. We've been at just events. We were recently at National Night Out. We've tried to reach different churches any way we can. We're trying to get children enrolled and involved. We would like every child to have a book in their hands through this program. So, there has been a lot of outreach efforts, specifically since June when we've expanded countywide. Again, I know I had mentioned our libraries. They have been amazing. Through story times, we've gone and enrolled children as well. We were recently at the Milliger's Farmers Market enrolling kids. So,
That's another good idea. Or maybe like pediatricians' offices, something like that. Mm-hmm. Is there any opportunity for listeners to volunteer with this program? Let's say your kids are way beyond this age and you can't enroll them. Do you have any opportunities to, like, do you need help on mailing days, for example?
Well, because the program has run through the Dolly Parton Foundation, they pretty much take care of all the mailing for us. It comes from a warehouse in Tennessee.
Oh.
So as of now, we don't have any volunteer opportunities for specific to this program, but United Way itself has a lot of volunteer opportunities to give back. Our Day of Caring is coming up on September 10th, where we have volunteers come from across the county and at different sites throughout the county to give back to your community. More information can be found on our website for that as well to volunteer.
Okay. Well, thanks for telling us all about that. That's a really interesting program. Jessica, maybe we can look at some of these other programs and see if there maybe are opportunities for people to volunteer through some of the other initiatives you have. So with Born Learning Trails, we got a little bit of an overview, but maybe you could kind of walk us through, if you wanted to do a Born Learning Trail, where would you go and what would it be like Mm-hmm. You know, you probably have your kids in the stroller or maybe the baby backpack. What happens?
Yeah. So we have just finished installing our fifth Born Learning Trail in Racine County. So the locations are Echo Park in Burlington, right by Veterans Terrace. There is a Born Learning Trail at Evergreen Elementary School in Waterford. We have one at North Beach in Racine and at West Park in Racine. And then our newest trail was just installed at the new Knapp Elementary School. And we'll be able to have that available for the 4 and 5K classes to use, as well as community members. So when you arrive at a trail, you will see a bunch of artwork on the sidewalks and then a series of signs. We offer the signs in both English and Spanish so that we can reach a larger population of the community. And the signs will say things like, look, jump, touch, and then it'll have some pointers for the parent or caregiver to read about how to engage the child. So it might say there might be some shapes painted on the sidewalk next to the sign, and then it'll say, what shapes do you see? When you look around, do you see any squares or triangles or circles? Encouraging the parents to say, hey, like, let's look around the world and see. We recognize shapes everywhere, not just in books, not just on these things that are painted in the sidewalk, but the window on that house looks like a rectangle, or the roof looks like a triangle, or that car just drove by had tires that look like circles. So getting some engagement and conversation going just about those everyday things that are all around us all of the time.
That sounds like the Millions of Words initiative. Mm-hmm. Is that what it's based on, this idea that you need to talk with your children?
It fits in so well with the Million Words. We know that kids from low-income homes can have as much of as a 30 million word gap when they come to kindergarten. And so just this everyday conversation is a great way to get more words, have conversation, talk about the world and the wonderment that children have, because kids are always looking and seeing and thinking about things that maybe as adults we don't take the time to observe or really appreciate. And kids get so excited about those kinds of things, and that's where that can really start to help develop their vocabulary, their pre-literacy skills, things that they need to be successful.
So if you go on to one of these sites for mm-hmm. a Born Learning Trail, about how long? I know I'm sure there's a big variation in mm-hmm. how long you could spend, but typically how long does it take?
You can spend as much or as little time as you want. We generally set up our trails to have two entrances. So depending on the direction that you're approaching the trail, there's a welcome sign that explains what the trail is. But then you're free to visit one, two, all 10 stations. And, you know, you could spend 5 minutes as you're just walking down the sidewalk, or you could really spend 20, 30, 40 minutes at the park doing each thing. Every trail has hopscotch. Each trail is unique. Joni is our creative force behind three of our trails, so she custom creates artwork for each individual trail. So you could go to all five and never have the same experience just because of the environment and the artwork that's on the trail. The signs are consistent across the trails, but that experience would be unique each time.
So Joni, have your kids done the trails with you?
They have. In fact, they're always asking to go. If we've just recently finished one at Knapp, and shortly after it dries, that's the first thing they want to do is walk it so they can see the artwork and play.
Do they have favorite activities that are on those trails, or is it different each time?
It's probably different each time, but I'd have to say that hopscotch is one of their favorite things. Mm-hmm. I've often thought about painting hopscotch at our own house on the sidewalk because they love it so much.
Right. And has your little ones done this yet?
My bigger little one, he's two. He loves to do anything with jumping, so he likes to be able to go and jump on the shapes and jump on the animals that are painted on the sidewalk and all that stuff. So he can hop like a frog and jump like a monkey. I don't know. He is a monkey, so. He really gets a kick out of it because it's bright and colorful and kind of unusual to see all sorts of stuff painted on a sidewalk, so it's captivating.
Mm-hmm. How many people do you usually encounter when you go? I mean, are there other families there almost all the time or not?
They're all in public places, so, yeah, they get a lot of use because For instance, the one in Waterford at Evergreen is next to the soccer field, so there's a lot of traffic there. It's next to the school playground, so kids are on it and jumping around and doing the activities every day when they're at school. So at North Beach, the trail goes down the hill that leads down to the playground into the Oasis area. So we see families just taking a stroll to the beach and stopping to do some of the activities all of the time. So it's really cool because that's what we want them to do. It's not necessarily the sole destination for a family's outing, but it enhances what they're doing already. So that's why they're in parks and schools, so that it's that opportunity to just do a little bit more with your kid that day.
So you've got a new fifth one. Are you mm-hmm. planning to expand? Is this an opportunity for a generous listener to, you know, sponsor a learning trail?
So they are a little labor intensive to install because everyone is unique. And so we don't have plans to expand to additional trails right now, but we do refresh them every couple of years because they get a lot of use in high traffic areas. So we're always looking for sponsors to help us with that refresh and purchase the materials that we need so that we can repaint the sidewalks and keep them fresh and new for kids. Another really awesome, since you asked, opportunity for sponsors is to help support Imagination Library. $30 a year provides the 12 books to a child, a book a month. And I can't really imagine a better investment than providing books to children. And $30 is really pretty manageable. So that's a minimal contribution for something that could have a huge impact on a child's life.
Wow. Well, I know from interviewing you in the past that you do have an actual volunteer opportunity through Schools of Hope.
Oh, yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Of course. We started Schools of Hope in 2012. As I said, it provides volunteer tutors to students in first through third grade to help them become more confident, capable readers. We rely on volunteers to make the program happen. I always say, without our awesome volunteers, I would just be like a lady with a clipboard and a plan and not getting anything done. So we need volunteers to commit to an hour per week. The tutoring takes place during the school day, during the school year, obviously. So we'll start tutoring in October and continue through May. Volunteers commit to that hour per week, and during that time, they work with two students one-on-one for 25 minutes each. Volunteers work with the same students for the entire school year, so it gives them that opportunity to build a relationship with the students and really get to know them. So they're not just working on reading, although that's our primary focus. There's a lot of relationship building and social emotional development and just the boost to a child's academic career that comes from knowing that there are adults that care about them, not just their teachers, not just the principal, not just their parents, but regular people from the community that care enough about them and their future to come in and work with them for an hour each week. And we find that it seems that the volunteers get as much, if not more, out of this experience than the students. You don't have to have any experience to be a tutor. You can just come to us and say, hey, I've got a little bit of time and some energy to devote to your program. We provide all of the training that people need, all of the resources and materials. So you can really just show up at the school, do your thing, work with the students, and then go back about your day, whether you're a retiree or somebody who's working and able to just slip away from the job site a little bit each week and have that impact on a child.
And if you are interested, I mean, usually at this point I ask for inspirational stories, but mm-hmm. as I said, we did an entire program about this. And you can actually go to our archives at wgtd.org/educationmatters and then go back to October of 2014 and hear directly from a volunteer and one of the teachers who has mm-hmm. volunteers working with her students. It is one of those kinds of things that I think has been very life-changing, not just for the children, but also for the volunteers. And I think mm-hmm. they would say the same thing, right, Jessica?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So when is your next volunteer training?
We are just getting our calendar and timeline set for the school year, so that information will be available on our website. It's unitedwayracine.org, and from there, volunteers will be able to complete an application and indicate their availability and preferred school, and consent to a background check. We thoroughly vet all of our volunteers to make sure we have safe people in schools, and then sign up for a training session. Those training sessions will happen at the end of September, and then tutoring will begin in October.
Wow. So there's a couple of things for you to keep in mind. If you are a listener who wants to help out by making donations, there's a couple of programs where you can do that. And if you want to actually be a volunteer, Schools of Hope is a great opportunity. And you don't need any teaching experience or really even any experience with children to do this, correct?
Not at all. When we first started the program, we asked people why they were attracted to the program. And it was rare that we found somebody that said, I'm a teacher and I want to teach kids. Obviously that's what educators do, but it's people from all over the community, all walks of life, who say, I love reading and I want to share that love of reading, or as a child I struggled to read and that made my life really tough and I want to prevent that situation for another child, and this is a really easy way to do it. So we train people using research-based methods, but really simple to implement. Anybody could do it. And I always tell our tutors, you are the expert reader in this situation. So even if you're not a teacher, you're sitting with a first, second, or third grader, you can master that reading material right along with them.
I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Education Matters, and we are discussing education initiatives through the United Way of Racine County. My guests are Jamie Racine, who is the Community Schools Manager with the United Way of Racine County, and Joni Meyerhofer, who has been the Imagination Library Program Coordinator at United Way of Racine County for the past 6 years, and Jessica Safransky-Schott, who is the Education Initiatives Director at United Way of Racine County and oversees the operation and implementation of United Way's education initiatives. If you missed any of this program and would like to hear all of it, there is an archived version available at WGTD.org, and you can also access a link on our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page. So go to Facebook and like WGTD:Education Matters. So Jamie is now here in the studio with us.
Hi.
Welcome, Jamie.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Today's a big day for you and the Community Schools program. What's happening later today?
Well, later today we have an event at the Golden Rondell where we'll be screening the documentary Oiler, which is about a year in a community school in Cincinnati, and that will be followed with a panel discussion with some of the leadership of the Community School Initiative pilot project at Knapp Elementary School.
So I just have to pause here and say we're taping this on Tuesday, so this is not happening on Saturday when this program will air. Is this the documentary available on Netflix or anything like that in case somebody wanted to watch it?
There are some screenings around the country, but there are also viewings of it available on PBS.
Oh, okay. So let's back up a little bit and describe for our listeners what a community school is.
Sure. So community school takes the classic vision of the school as the center of the neighborhood and updates it to help support whole community change. And so it's both a place and also a set of partnerships. So the community school model brings in the supports that have been that are in need and have been identified by the community to help alleviate pressures, whether pressures from poverty or from other neighborhood needs, to alleviate gaps for learning.
So how was Knapp chosen as a site for a community school?
So when our president, Rodney Prunty, originally approached the superintendent, Dr. Lolly Hawes, about this idea, they were looking at the potential of a very large referendum for our district. And when they were talking about the community school model, Dr. Hawes suggested that they look at one of the three elementary schools that were slated for a complete remodel. Mm-hmm. And then when they looked at demographics and some of the other work and the focus that United Way has had, the Knapp neighborhood rose to the top. There are historically a lot of needs in that community, and there's sort of a desert of social services. And so we wanted to come together with the faculty and the community members at Knapp to launch this initiative. And in doing so, we were the architects were able to look at the community school model and infuse some of those elements into the design of the brand new building.
Wow. So if you walk into Knapp, how do you know it's a community school? Does it look different? Are there things going on that don't seem like regular school?
It's a regular school. Yeah. I don't think you would be able to see it. I think that historically, if you look at a long-term context of education, and I look to the school that I went to when I grew up, close-knit communities that support one another, there's active participation in education and in the support of the community's health. Mm-hmm. And so that is what this community school brings back to life. And I think what you'll see is a place where you want to be.
Mm-hmm. So what specific services are provided at Knapp that maybe aren't in other schools in the district?
Sure. Well, we will have a full-service in-school mental health clinic that will be operational by later this fall. We're partnering with Children's to provide that clinic. We will also have a host of other health supports that may exist in some schools, but not in all. We'll be bringing in a mobile dental clinic as well as a mobile physical health clinic that will be available for students as well as parents and community members. We will have a plethora of after-school programs, which I think you'll see in other schools. And so on the surface, it'll look similar. But what we're doing behind the scenes with those after-school programs is creating an echo chamber from what's happening during the school day to what's happening after school, so that teachers are integrated into what's happening after school with their students, and families are involved in that. And likewise, that what's happening after school is coming back to the teachers. And a lot of it is communication. Is everybody is there for the children's success and mm-hmm. to build that up. And so if we all know what's happening at different places, we're better able to support those students.
Hmm. So I teach future teachers at Carthage College, and I teach a unit on the history of education. And one of the things we do, we watch an archival film of a school in, actually it's in Gary, Indiana, and I think they would probably call it a community school. So it had things like, there were health clinics inside this school district and in this particular school. And the narrator tells us that one of the reasons that they actually put swimming pools in these schools is so children would bathe, because there were oftentimes they lived in tenements where they didn't have access to that sort of thing. And then schools became centers for learning, particularly for adults trying to learn English. I don't know if any of that is part of your plan, or did you look at any of these historical, 100 years ago kinds of community schools?
Definitely. That's something that there's the Coalition for Community Schools, which is a nationwide network. We will be joining over 5,000 community schools nationwide. And though in the recent educational spectrum, it's a new concept, I agree with you. It definitely is based in this historical whole community support systems that schools definitely served. And that is something we've looked at.
Mm-hmm. So do teachers or administrators have to get any special training or sign on to this before the program was begun?
It was very important for us to have teacher voice in what we were doing. So when we hosted community conversations where we had teachers and staff as well as parents providing input and insight to what do they want their school to look like? What do they want this community school to be? This is the idea. This is the premise. So what does that mean to you? And all that feedback was what was used to design the framework that we've built before we even got to the point where we're at right now, where we're ready to launch the school year.
Mm-hmm. And so what outcomes are you expecting from the program? Like, what are some of the benefits that other community schools have seen?
I think that some of the things that other community schools have seen is increased attendance, increased parent participation, increased academic performance. Those are all components that we're working with. In addition to the community conversations, a lot of our goals and outcomes are aligned with the school improvement plan. Knapp is a priority school, which means it was identified as a low-performing school by the state and is therefore under scrutiny and has a very specific improvement plan and goals that it needs to reach. And so we want to align our supports to help further those initiatives and meet those benchmarks. So we really are in partnership with the school district and the school to help improve some of those elements.
So one of the things that you mentioned was that there's mental health services available, and I think that there might be some listeners that would be surprised that elementary-aged kids would need mental health services. So what do we know about providing that service and how it might affect their ability to learn?
Well, we are not the first in-school mental health clinic. This past year, Racine Unified implemented a full-service mental health clinic at two other elementary schools in Racine Unified, at SC Johnson and Wadowitz Elementary. And what we're seeing is children are coming to school with trauma. So that trauma can come from any variety of family issues or neighborhood issues that are outside of the school's control. That's one element. There's also a support of a social-emotional learning that is integrated into the North Star vision of Racine Unified. And that social-emotional support is something that all schools are providing, and that in-school mental health clinic allows us to provide a licensed therapist to take it one step further for students that are coming to school with trauma or maybe experiencing other learning disabilities or mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. And so if they maybe get the therapy they need for the trauma, they're sort of less distracted in the classroom, more able to engage?
Definitely. Yeah. And the therapists work hand in hand with the teachers, too, to help implement better behavioral tactics and so that their classrooms can be more successful.
Mm-hmm. Is there any way, Jessica, where all of these initiatives kind of meet? You've got a Born Learning Trail at Knapp, is that correct?
Yep.
Anything else that where we've got intersections between these programs?
Yeah, pretty much everything we do is connected in some way. So we offer Schools of Hope at Knapp. We have, this will be our second year of tutoring. So people could volunteer specifically to tutor at Knapp if they were interested in being immersed in that community school environment. Imagination Library is open to children that are four and under. So that would include some of their 4K students and the younger siblings of children who will eventually become students at Knapp. So it all kind of comes together at the community school.
So I always like, I know our listeners really enjoy sort of hearing kind of the inspiring stories that come out of these programs. So I'm wondering if each of you could maybe tell us a little story about something that you've done either through the current program that you're working with or some other thing that you've done through United Way around education. Jessica,
I'll
want to start?
Sure. Everybody looks at me. I'll share a little Schools of Hope story. We had a student who at the beginning of the year, the tutor said, did not want to read, did not want to sit with the tutor, didn't want to participate in the program, didn't seem to like books or reading or anything. And the tutor was perseverant and didn't give up, even though it was not maybe what they were expecting at first, and started to build a relationship with that child and got to know them really well. And over the course of the school year, started to see the student just blossom and really become interested in reading and books until the end of the year when we have these awesome celebrations and we surprise the kids with backpacks full of books so that they can continue reading over the summer. And we also have snacks at these celebrations because it's, you know, nice to celebrate with a little snack as well. And the student was really focused on the snacks. And then they brought out the backpacks full of books. And all of a sudden, that snack was totally forgotten. That student wanted to sit with their tutor and read every single book in that backpack. They didn't want to go outside for our group photo. They didn't want to go back to class. They didn't want to have that snack. They wanted to sit and read. And it was such a complete change in that child to see somebody who didn't want to hold a book, didn't want to open the book, to don't want to do anything but sit here and read this book that's mine. It's just incredible to see that transformation in a student.
Great. Well, a few different ones come to mind, but the most recent one, the most recent story that I think of is at one of my recent visits to the Racine Public Library since expanding countywide, I had talked to the parents about the program, and a mother with a young child, a little girl, she I think had just turned two, when I explained that she would be getting a book a month, was so incredibly grateful, and she had told me that she reading was one of her daughter's favorite things to do, and they didn't have more than 5 books at home, so they would often visit the library each many times throughout the week so that her daughter could look at books and read with her. So the thought of having her own books at home, and she was only 2, so you know, this program goes until shortly before your 5th birthday. She'll get a book a month until then. It was really great to see the appreciation that she had and to know that we were going to do something for that little girl that was going to impact her kindergarten readiness and just really build a great foundation for education for her and her mom. And you knew that her mom was going to spend the time with her to read the stories. I also have to note that we have a really great story on our website on the Imagination Library page about a little boy that had developmental delays, and once he was enrolled within the program, showed significant progress. So
great. So that's another encouragement to go to, what's the address?
Sure, www.unitedwayracine.org/IL.
Okay. And Jamie, so I know this this program at NAP is new, this community school concept, but do you have anything you want to share with us about it or about other initiatives that you've worked on?
I do. Well, I started with United Way this past April, and so my first charge was to take all of the information gathering work that United Way had done to that point and build a framework that we can launch this fall. And that's what I've been working on. And I think what's been most inspiring for me in that work is the open-mindedness and the helping hands that all the communities are coming out with. So that we really have a great village in Racine and in throughout southeastern Wisconsin. And people are coming together around the solution instead of drowning in the problem. So it's really exciting to be among so many motivated and willing helpers and supporters of this work.
Great. Well, thank you. So a reminder, there's a number of different programs. The best place that you can go to find out more is the website, Jessica, which is, one more time,
UnitedWayRacine.org.
And is there a phone number in case people are not web users?
Absolutely, 262-898-2240, and our staff will connect you to whoever you're looking to speak with.
Right, and as we've discussed, there are volunteer opportunities, there are donation opportunities, and maybe you just want to go and look at some of the stories on the website. I want to thank you all for being here. Jamie Racine, who is the Community Schools Manager of the United Way of Racine County, thank you. Joni Meyerhofer, who has been the Imagination Library Coordinator at United Way of Racine County for the past 6 years.
Thank you.
And Jessica Safransky-Schott is the Education Initiatives Director at United Way of Racine County and oversees the operation and implementation of United Way's education initiatives.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you all so much. If you missed any of our program and would like to hear all of it, there is an archived version available at WGTD.org, and you can also access a link on our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archive programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. Support comes from Kenosha Harbor Market, featuring Sweet Impact Fudge, ethically sourced chocolate with 10% of sales donated to groups that help women and children turn oppression into opportunity. Kenosha Harbor Market on 2nd Avenue and Plaza Du Bois is open Saturdays from 9 to 2. This year's Jazz Rhythm and Blues Festival at Kenosha Harbor Park is Saturday, August 20th. Rebirth Brass Band headlines, also New Blue, featuring Carly Sky, daughter of legendary blues artist Buddy Guy. Proceeds benefit the Mary Lou and Arthur F. Mahone Fund, promoting healthy lifestyle initiatives and educational and career opportunities for all students. Tickets at MahoneFund.org, a supporter of WGTD. Tell you what makes your big head so hard. WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer, my gosh.
You really made me think. You really read the book.
Yeah.
No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg hosts the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD. Support for WGTD comes from the Racine Symphony, presenting a Pops concert Friday evening, August 26th at Festival Hall that will feature songs from familiar movies and theatrical performances. For individual tickets, visit racinesymphony.org or call 636-9285.
Hi, I'm Bob Tenuta of the Gateway Radio Reading Service. We volunteers read the local newspapers to the visually impaired over the radio. Would you like to do the same and not have